Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now here are your hosts, Mick and Jake.
Today we're talking about CocoaPods with Arta Therox, iOS developer at Artsy, and one of CocoaPods' main contributors. Hey Arta, thanks for joining us.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Not going. It's good, you?
Great. I thought I'd throw you off. Do people normally ask you how you're doing at the start of these podcasts?
No.
Oh.
You're the first.
It's been like two series. I feel really proud. That's my achievement.
Before we dive into CocoaPods, can you tell us a little more about yourself and how you got into iOS development?
Sure. So I'm Arta Therox. I'm also from the north of England, like Mick. I've been doing Objective-C for about 10 years now. I was a Mac developer before it was cool and before iOS really existed. And now I've done Swift for 4 months, so I'm obviously getting with the times. Head of mobile at Artsy, as you said earlier, and that's a website and an app for making the art world accessible to everybody, because the art world's pretty niche-y. But I'm mostly known for CocoaPods, where I'm a design dictator, which is basically doing the design, trying to act like a normal user and improving documentation for everybody so that it's easy and accessible.
Okay, great. And so how did you first get involved with CocoaPods then?
So this is a little bit archival. It doesn't make too much sense if you're new to CocoaPods nowadays, but we used to have this thing where when you wanted to make a new CocoaPod, you would send a pull request to this repository that we called the Specs Repo. And I originally spent my time dealing with pull requests every day just to see how, just to get people's pods in onto the system. So that meant that they could get new versions, so they could get new libraries into the system. I felt it was like a really good way to contribute to a community, but it wasn't actually that much time and effort for me, and I could just do it over the course of most days. But doing that ended up making it very easy to start moving into the core team. And so I just started finding holes in things that I wanted to improve, like documentation. So I started building documentation, and then I realized that I kind of hated the design of CocoaPods, and so I fixed that too. And nowadays, I just spend a lot of time designing stuff.
Well, I bet the rest of the guys that were working on CocoaPods at the time kind of embraced you with open arms, and if you came in from a documentation point of view, yeah, that's like one of the worst things, or one of the last things developers tend to work on.
That's totally true.
Yeah. So back in February this year, you and Sacheré Rocky, which is another Ray Wenderlich team member, gave a tech talk on CocoaPods as part of Ray's monthly tech talk series. We will put a link to that in the show notes. But for anyone who didn't catch that or who hasn't heard of the project, could you explain in layman terms what CocoaPods is and what problem it's trying to solve?
Okay, so the official term here is a dependency manager for iOS. And what that really means is that we make it very easy for you to install other people's code or to sort of separate out your internal libraries so that they can be shared between multiple projects. It's quite a simple idea, but it just makes it very simple for you to start chunking things or using somebody else's chunks of code. But if you want a high-level overview, the metaphor that I've been thinking of lately is a little bit around cooking. So you as a developer want to create a recipe which dictates all of the different pieces in your app. And what CocoaPods does is it goes to these multiple places that we call specs repos, and they contain all the ingredients. And so CocoaPods goes to these different specs repos, pulls in all the ingredients, bundles it all together into one beautiful little package for you, and then just passes it to you to go and do your thing with and try and just build your app.
Oh, you should definitely get some graphics done for that for the website.
Sure. We've experimented with also like hardware shops and all sorts of interesting metaphors, but so far cooking seems to work pretty well. We've got about 7,000 pods though, so there's a very large amount of tools, and for most problems it's probably already been solved and you could contribute instead of making it yourself but to improving somebody else's.
So you've gone from corner shop to hypermarket then, is what you're saying?
Yeah, actually this is interesting because I put this in my notes, like I was saying like CocoaPods itself is like the Walmart of all of these libraries. It has everything, but you yourself can have your own local stores. In my case, we have one for Artsy where we have our own specs repo that anybody can go and see. And what they do is they make it all of our internal libraries that we don't really think are that valuable to people outside of CocoaPods, in the general outside of Artsy, in the general public of developers. But we can make these public and on our own private specs repo, so our own little store, and then they can also be open source and available for anybody if they're really into it. But at the same time, there's probably not that relevant. Like, I'm sure you guys don't really care about having Artsy branded colors, but for all of our projects we do. And so we can have CocoaPods internally that can also be public, as well as having this hypermarket store that does everything, like all the blocks plus UI alert views that you'd ever want.
Is that something that anyone can do? Can anyone set up their own CocoaPod server and kind of distribute their own internal dependency management through that?
Yeah, totally. It's not even like the word server there. It's just a Git repo or a Subversion repo or I think a Mercurial repo. You just have to set it up. So if you're already using GitHub, you can just create a new repository and just drag in two or three files, and that's everything. My company has a public one, so I give that to people as a reference. So that's just github.com/artsy/specs. And super easy, really quick, and it's just managed all for you then.
It seems like one of the things that has helped CocoaPods along is it always has appeared to be, and I've never set up any of my open source, I don't have any major open source projects myself, but yeah. It seems like it's always been really easy to set up CocoaPods pod and add whatever project you have to CocoaPods. Seems like that's really kind of smoothed the way for lots and lots of people to use it.
It also makes it really easy to upgrade. As I said, I was a Mac developer for 10 years, and back in the old days, you just copied in some source code and then never updated it again, and you changed some compiler flags at one point, and then when you wanted to update the actual library itself, you'd have to go and, you know, pull in the new files, actually drag in some ones that may have been changed, change any system settings in between that. But a lot of that just goes away, and you completely forget that you used to have problems updating old external dependencies or your own internal libraries. I think it has really lowered the bar to entry of using other people's code. As a library author, you just write, here's the line of code to add to your pod file, and then it works.
And the other thing about CocoaPod's popularity is that it seems like it has become kind of a de facto authority on where to go even if you don't want to use CocoaPods to import that code into your own project. It seems like it's a great place to go to find out, you know, is there a good graph? I mean, Nick, we're talking about graphing libraries. Is there a good graphing library for iOS? It seems like the first best place to go is to go look on CocoaPods.
This is totally correct, in my humble opinion, as the person building that site. And honestly, I think we're doing a good job of it, and I can see so many like potential futures for where we could go to improve on that. I think later on I can tell you a little bit about some of the things that we're doing on the website to improve that discoverability and, you know, that problem of I have four or five graphing libraries, which one should I choose, is also a really interesting problem in my opinion.
And is that a problem that you're looking to solve then at the minute?
Yes, this is what I've been thinking about for maybe the last 3 or 4 months. And personally, I've been building these kind of quality metrics for libraries. So for example, we already know, and we have all this data like publicly available, how well documented is your library? How complex is your README? Does it have images? Is there tests? Does it... how many lines of code is in it? What type of source files? How big is the download? All of these things are individual metrics. When you mix them with popularity metrics, like how many forks, how many stars, how many watches, you can suddenly start to actually sort based on some pretty fuzzy metrics on what is, in definition, almost objectively the best library. So suddenly, CocoaPod sorts. Crazy stuff, right?
No, I mean, that's really interesting. So is this something that you're just sort of playing around with locally because it interests you? Or is that something that you're definitely looking to push in the near future?
We're definitely looking to push it. I just made a bunch of issues showing the new designs for what it should look like today, because it's Thanksgiving for anybody who's not here in the room, which means that Americans basically have the day off, so I decided to have a quasi day off. which is really cool. And yeah, so this sorting already works right now. It sorts by popularity, but for me, the real search and sorting problem comes around, like, I want to have an overview of this project, and I want to also have some sense of sorting, and I think knowing whether it's documented would mean that it should rank higher. So we start to play with all these individual metrics and generate pretty solid sorting algorithms. I make a guess normally of what I expect a result to look like, and then start tweaking sorting algorithms based on that itself.
Cool. Now, you mentioned earlier that you use CocoaPods in Artsy, which is where you work. Were they already using CocoaPods before you went in, or did you go in as like an evangelist and convert everybody to using CocoaPods?
No. My app, one or two of my apps existed before CocoaPods for Artsy. So I kind of migrated once I realized that it felt like the right way to do dependencies. I spent maybe 6 months out of iOS and Mac development doing Ruby on Rails to try something new. And you really get a sense that you need something like this in order to deal with larger complex projects. So I just started using CocoaPods and started realizing that CocoaPods solves a bunch of problems, but if I helped on it, I could help it solve even more. It's like right now, we had a really interesting problem. We wanted to create an app that was entirely open source, but we didn't really know how to deal with getting user and project keys, you know, like analytics keys or API keys, these kind of authentication things. We didn't know how to get those into the app. So we ended up building a CocoaPods plugin that keeps all these details in a user's keychain and then brings them in later. So, and I mean users by the developer. So the developer each can have unique keys for their own installs, which is really cool. But like, we had to build a plugins API for CocoaPods to build that kind of thing. And if you're not in a position where you understand the code base, then you probably might not come up with ideas like that that could be generic and for everybody.
I mean, that does sound like a really good idea, because obviously that means that no longer do you have to commit those keys. Well, you shouldn't be committing those keys anyway. But for those that do accidentally, you know, it completely moves abstracts that away into something else. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. But I noticed as well on the CocoaPods.org site that Artsy is now a sponsor of CocoaPods. So, I mean, how did that come about, if you can talk about it?
No, it's fine. This one was easy, actually. I think... whenever I want to buy something on CocoaPods, I just charge Artsy for it. So it was really simple. It was like, oh, so I want to use fancy fonts for the CocoaPods website. I will charge Artsy the money for the fonts, and then we'll put them on the website. It's more like my developer time is in part the money that goes towards CocoaPods, because I just do CocoaPods stuff on work time as well as doing it in my spare time, because after a while it just got too much work to even try and do in my spare time alone. And that was kind of a natural evolution of responsibilities. I just started out doing something quite small and helping out every now and again, to then suddenly being pretty much an integral part of the team, to then moving into almost management. And that requires a very large amount of communication overhead. And Artsy's really good with this. Like, they're huge on, well, the company, the CTO, is even more open source than I am. So he gets annoyed when I don't open source everything, like our apps. And I'm still not there yet, but I will be, and I'd love to like keep moving forwards to be even more open source. I don't know if there's like a verb you can use there, but yeah, they do a pretty good job of making me feel like I can work for the community as well as working for Artsy, because you rise the tides and all ships go up, or something like that. I don't remember the actual metaphor.
That's a great place to be. I mean, it's really nice not to have to feel like you have to hide it or, that it's competing. I mean, that's pretty awesome. I don't think that's common. I think that's the exception to the rule where a company's that progressive. And so that's great. That's great.
The RayWenderlich.com podcast will be right back. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Have you ever wondered how, as an iOS developer, you can develop a native app or game on iOS and get it ported to Android instantly and automatically without the need to install any extra SDKs or to learn any additional programming languages or frameworks? My App Converter can help you do just that. It's a true native iOS to Android code conversion service and can be used either online or as an Xcode IDE plugin. My App Converter currently supports Cocos 2D, SpriteKit, UIKit and GLKit, and is being extended to support all native iOS APIs. Sign up before the end of December and enjoy 3 months free iOS to native Android code conversion at myappconverter.com/RayWenderlich.
You mentioned a little earlier that you have been working on Swift lately. Is CocoaPods, does it play nicely with Swift? Are there any issues that have come up since Swift has been introduced?
So I'm using CocoaPods on Swift on a branch of CocoaPods. So it's not even been merged on master yet. So it's like the most bleeding edge, bleeding, like get cut, get dirty, and actually have to do CocoaPods things occasionally. But it works really well.
So, like, if I was writing a Swift project now and I wanted to include somebody else's Swift open source project, can I not do that currently through CocoaPods? That's what you're working on.
Yeah, exactly. So,
is that
do it
is
if
that...
you're willing to use a CocoaPods branch?
Okay.
Like, I was so glad to move all of our submodules out of the application and into CocoaPods and let it manage all of the actual frameworks for me. The one thing was that the old style declaration of doing hash or pound imports all had to change, and we had to start using at import everywhere, and sometimes it changes the identifiers because frameworks can't have things like pluses or negatives. They all have to always have to be underscores. But so we had to make a few code changes. But to my knowledge, I think everything is going quite swimmingly. We just have a large amount of features that CocoaPods does, and so the Swift CocoaPods have to also support all of the exact same features as the library, the static library CocoaPods, and then finally, we also have to just try and test it on as many projects as possible. So in an ideal world, we'll be releasing release candidates as soon as possible, so people that are willing to actually get burnt a little bit, but be ahead of the pack and actually, have a feel for how the system works, can do it, and it should just work, in my opinion.
So there was nothing when Apple released Swift in the summer. Then there was nothing that like instantly threw up a brick wall for you guys. You've just been kind of exploring it since then, but everything looks as though it's, swimming along nicely.
Yeah, that's the basic summary. I mean, it's open source, so for a lot of us, it's our spare time projects, and somebody came out of nowhere and said that they would do Swift CocoaPods, and they actually have done Swift CocoaPods, which is kind of mind-blowing that someone would just not be a core team member, but just someone that's made two or three pull requests and then actually starts building the entire of CocoaPods Swift support on his own. It's been very impressive. it's been really good to actually be able to use it now, though. So, I mean, it's like 3 months work at this point for one man in his spare time.
Oh, that is kind of crazy. But, I mean, one of the things that I've wondered, because I know, like, well, I was unsure about whether or not you'd had any issues with Swift, but I know in the past we just sort of point releases of Xcode
that
introduced problems with CocoaPods. Is anyone at Apple had ever reached out to either you or, you know, one of the other contributors just to talk about Xcode and CocoaPods compatibility, you know, when you take into account the scale, like you were saying before, so many CocoaPods, so many million pages, you know, it's a big project that a lot of their developers are relying on now.
Yeah. We meet the Xcode team pretty much every year at WWDC for dinner. And in general, it's just like a formal chat that they say they're not breaking anything. We say we're not going to break everything ourselves. And, you know, it's just nice. We have like the emails of the heads. If we ever really have a question about whether something's a good or bad idea. But a lot of the time, we just presume that Xcode is a black box. And so we'll do everything we can to make our tools an abstraction on top of that. So that, you know, we're generating Xcode projects, and then it does its thing eventually. Because we don't entirely trust it, and I'm not entirely sure the Xcode team entirely trusts us. So it's like a nice, like...
So it's a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. They did hint at once that they were going to break backwards compatibility, but decided against it because of us. But, I mean, that's probably good for everybody, right?
No, I think it's good that Apple, well, have A, acknowledged that it exists.
Yeah.
And B, you know, even if there's nothing sort of set in stone and, you know, it's just sort of a casual chat about you both agree not to break each other's work. You know, it's good that they're engaging in that way. Because, I mean, it used to be such a walled garden. You know, it was us and them. And they do seem to be becoming a bit more approachable nowadays. So, no, I mean, that's really good.
I think so. I mean, it's still, like, it's all very off the books kind of, you know, it's just dinner. It's not, like, talking with Apple. And I'm air quoting right now, talking with Apple. But it is still just a let's not break each other's stuff kind of thing.
Speaking of new features, besides Swift, we now in iOS have the ability to import frameworks. And I saw this new dependency manager called Carthage that was just announced. And it looks like they're taking advantage of that feature too. And I'm not an expert on Carthage. I just read a couple of posts about the announcement. But from my understanding, they don't have to manipulate the workspace file the same way that CocoaPods does. Can you comment on Carthage, and do you think that you will change how CocoaPods works at some point to take more advantage of the framework feature? Or I'd kind of be interested in your take on all that.
Yeah, I think Carthage is an interesting project. It's basically a subset of what CocoaPods does, in that they expect you as the end user to know a lot about the projects and how it will then integrate in the end. And I think it's really, really useful for people that really want know a lot about how Xcode works. So the rough gist is that Carthage will, you give it a list of things, of dependencies, and it will just grab each one, effectively run it through Xcode build system, and then you can drag out the frameworks and then you can put them into Xcode however you want. And I think that's a nice solution, but in my opinion, it misses quite a lot of the core concepts of dependency management, which is like being able to search for known dependencies, being able to deal with resolution. So things that depend on other things are pretty hard to set up in a system like Carthage, because you never define up front how things connect to anything else. But the fact that it does frameworks means that upgrading is just as simple as dragging a new copy of the framework in. And you could maybe just have one person that runs the cart file and like generates these frameworks and drags them into the project, and then you just keep them in there. So there's definitely like it's a nice perspective on doing dependency management. But I think it leaves a lot to the user that in general I think should be better off dealt with by automated tools.
Not that's, from a biased opinion whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we are basing ourselves off known dependency managers. There is a lot that do this. Like in the Ruby world, there are 5 separate dependency managers, 4 of which have come from GitHub also. But people only really use one, which is a centralized dependency manager that does exactly what CocoaPods does. It's like you want the least fussing when you're dealing with multiple dependencies.
Do you think the appeal might be, though, that there's less magic involved?
I mean, there is less magic, for sure. Like, if you don't understand how CocoaPods works, then it's not magic. I understand how CocoaPods works, and I know it's not magic. But people that don't will have the same problem with Carthage eventually, because as Carthage actually starts getting features, then suddenly it's getting to find that in order to support a bunch of different workflows, they're going to have to start adding what is effectively magic into the system. So it's a trade-off of that. Right now it's very simple, but as it becomes something that people want it to be, and maybe it won't, maybe Justin, who runs it, will just keep feature set very slim, and then it will have its uses. I think it's definitely space for it.
Cool. Now, I really want to jump in here because there's a really poor segue into one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, but while it's there, I'm going to seize it. You were mentioning there about sort of dragging frameworks in and making sure they were committed, and I reckon you're probably already guessing the question that's coming up, and it's always a controversial one, but yeah. I want to get like an official take on it. Should I be committing the pods directory to source control, or is the pod file enough?
So the official CocoaPods line is that you should. My personal line is that I don't. So it depends on your project. In my case, I'm building apps that continually have development. So there's not going to be a point where we stop working on it for, you know, a year or two and then come back for iOS 9. But if it was something that was going to be, incrementally built, I would definitely be checking in my pods.
Okay, cool. I mean, so, because one of the reasons why, like, I've always used CocoaPods in my personal projects, but I know I've come up against issues with other people that I've looked to work with CocoaPods because they're concerned that, you know, dependencies can disappear and, you know, you can run into issues with versions. So putting the source, it limited the need for CocoaPods if you were just putting the source in the repo, sort of their take on it. So, and then you type that question into Google and you get 100 different answers.
A million answers, yeah. Right? Well, I mean, yeah, strictly, like downloading the actual, downloading is only a subset of what CocoaPods does, right? It's still the integration and the upgrading and avoiding submodules is basically one of its best features. And dragging and dropping is really kind of an archaic way to, if you're drag and dropping source code is really an archaic way of trying to handle upgrading and dealing with your dependencies. Like, a better abstraction for that exists, so ideally people should be using it.
What are some of your favorite CocoaPods that you've used?
I was talking to someone about this earlier, actually, so this is kind of convenient. So this one is interesting. It's called JS Decoupled App Delegate. And it's summed up what it does in itself in the name, and it turns the app delegate protocol into 8 separate protocols. So if you, the developer, basically include this library into your application, you suddenly start forcing yourself into better code practices around the app delegate. And I find it's this really interesting library that just forces you to have cleaner code just right out of the box. I mean, sure, you could set them all to be on one object, but suddenly you start to think, well, why would I put my notifications on the same object that deals with whether, you know, I'm the foremost app or the in the background? That was really clever. I guess some of my other ones then are like Reactive Cocoa. I've been using that a bunch. It's a paradigm-changing library that forces you to think in a different way when you're trying to build applications to avoid state. And I've been really happy with that. I've been using, well, internally in Artsy, we built something called Moya, which is a network abstraction layer so that you can then build your API clients on top of. And that builds on top of Reactive Cocoa and Alamo Fire and makes it really easy to do reactive network programming. And then finally, the one that changed the way I wrote tests is called FP Snapshot Test Case, which is a library for taking snapshots of views at runtime and comparing it against reference images. And whilst the idea is very simple, suddenly you can make these really design-heavy tests that can test a very large amount of your code base very quickly without having to do a large amount of smaller, like itty-bitty tests that allow you to at least get a feel for what changes you're doing affecting different view controllers or different view states. That actually made testing fun for me. I think before that, I wasn't entirely sold on it.
You've obviously just given us a quick rundown on sort of three or four of the Cocoa Pods you're currently really interested in. But if I remember rightly, you used to do, was it a 5-minute podcast? Are you still doing that where you kind of highlighted one or two?
No, I was doing it with my CTO at Artsy, and then he stopped doing iOS development, so it kind of put all of the pressure on me to do everything, and I'm not very good at doing repeated things. So I'm congrats on you guys managing to run a podcast this long. But I think there's definitely space for someone to keep doing something like that. Just a quick tell you what's new in the last week and then get off the air.
Well, maybe we could do a Cocoa Pod of the Week
Seriously.
feature. So I'm just conscious of the time, so I'm going to look to wrap things up. But just before we do, like, any chance you can kind of give us a raywenderlich.com exclusive on what's next for Cocoa Pods?
Well, I've spent the last week of my spare time trying to build a new about page for Cocoa Pods, which is like after Carthage came out, we started to think like what are our defining points, and why did we make the decisions we made, and it's looking really beautiful. I think that should be the next thing that I'll be releasing.
Fantastic. And I think that probably is a good place to wrap things up. So, Orta, thanks again for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No, it's been great. And that's it for another episode. So, as always, if you've got any questions or feedback, then please don't hesitate to get in touch via podcast@raywenderlich.com. And if you do enjoy the podcast, then please make sure to leave a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
Ciao.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.